Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Wednesday. It's July 17th. We've got 64 degrees here in Old Town Park City, 66 degrees in the Heber Valley, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Pretty nice conditions overall today. We just have some of the smoke and haze we're going to be dealing with. Otherwise, temperatures remain above average. We'll be in the mid to upper 80s for much of the Wasatch Back, about 88 with mostly sunny skies for Park City. Overnight lows into the low 60s again, similar to what we're seeing this morning with 89 on Thursday. And we've talked about moisture rotating around a ridge of high pressure, which is in control of the forecast right now. It will generate a decent chance of afternoon showers and thunderstorms Thursday for the Wasatch Back. So about a 30 to 40% chance of seeing some showers and thunderstorms Thursday and Friday, before slightly drier conditions slide in over the weekend. As the ridge continues to shift further west, it'll cut off any potential monsoon moisture that's streaming up and around it. So looking at mostly sunny skies this weekend, temperatures still in the upper 80s, about 88 for Park City, both Saturday and Sunday. And we'll continue to see similar temperatures into next week with partly cloudy skies Monday, Tuesday. Slight chance of a shower and thunderstorm remain early next week, or return, I should say, early next week. Heber City also looking at smoky skies today, highs near 95. We'll maintain those mid-90s tomorrow and into the weekend. Again, a decent chance of afternoon storms on Thursday and again on Friday as moisture rotates around the ridge. Mostly sunny skies this weekend with 94 expected for the high, overnight lows in the mid-50s. And then partly cloudy skies and about a 20% chance of seeing an afternoon storm on Monday, Tuesday next week with temperatures at 94 Monday, Tuesday as well.
Okay, thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'll be checking in with Park City Mayor Nan Worrell, Summit County Council Chair Melina Stevens, and Park City Chamber CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff. We'll be talking about their trip to Paris for the announcement of the 2034 Winter Games. Then founder of Park City's point-to-point mountain bike endurance race, Jay Burke, will be introducing the new director who has taken it on, Steve Adderholt. Finally, Park City Fire District Marshal Mike Owens we'll be joined by Sherry Wellman, who serves as Park City's fire marshal. They'll be talking about the increased danger now in fire, and the ban on fireworks is approved by both Summit County and Park City Councils. Well, Park City Mayor Nan Worrell, Summit County Council Chair Melina Stevens, and Park City Chamber of Commerce and Visitors Bureau CEO Jennifer Wesselhoff are all off to Paris next week for the International Olympic Committee's 2034 Winter Olympics vote. An announcement. They all join me now in the studio. Good morning, ladies. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe, Nan, we'll start with you, and you can speak. I guess let's just find out first who's paying to send you. Taxpayers?
$12,000 of all of the expenses of my trip, which are significantly more, will be coming from Park City taxpayers.
Okay, and Melina, is that the case for you as well?
We're looking at using transient room tax monies, which comes from sales tax.
Taxpayers, yeah. And same for you then, Jennifer?
Right, Leslie, as you know, we're funded primarily through the transient room taxes. So, yeah, we'll be using those funds to fund the trip.
Okay, so 12 grand for you, Nan. How much is your budget, Melina?
I would have to get back to you on that, Leslie. I think right now we're close to 6 or 7.
Okay, and Jennifer?
I think we're about close to that too, probably closer to the 10 or 12,000. We're doing the best that we can to save on costs. In fact, for a portion of the trip, Melina and I are sharing a room to be able to share some costs on lodging. So we're definitely being responsible for those dollars.
All right, you understand kind of the leadership part of it, right? I mean, leadership class, right, where you share bunk together. Nan, your husband's joining you, and you've got the room, so that's kind of taken care of. Will he be paying for his airfare and his incidentals?
Absolutely. He will pay every penny of his expenses.
Okay. Except for the room. That's something that, right, you'd certainly. But you didn't invite your spouses, then. You too, Jennifer and Melina.
You know, we didn't invite our spouses. I think with this, you brought up city tour previously. I think in my mind, this is very similar to a city tour. Yes, we're going for the bid and we're really excited for that awarding process. And personally, I'm really excited and think I speak for everyone that is attending, at least from Sunnet County, excited to see what can we learn from this experience. How can we find different gems that we can take back and incorporate into our planning process?
Well, some of the comments on social media about this news when it came out were pretty critical about why all of you need to be there. And I guess, Melina, you're retiring from the county council at the end of the year. So why is it important that you participate next year or next week?
You know, it's important that Summit County stays engaged. I know when in the 2002 Olympics that Summit County and Park City really had to fight to have a seat at the table. Right now, I think it's really important that we maintain our seat at the table and ensure that as we move forward, that we are there to be able to get many of our infrastructure and other needs met through this process. We have a really big opportunity through the Olympics to be able to accelerate some of our infrastructure improvements throughout the county, in particular in Kimball Junction and potentially in 248. And if we're not at the table, if we're not showing up, if we're not engaging with the committee that is planning, I'm afraid that we will be forgotten.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that infrastructure. And I don't believe any of you were here for the 2002 Winter Games.
That's correct.
Right? But you might know some of the history in terms of, I mean, we certainly saw what are known as the spewies there on the single point urban interchanges that we got on I-80 and 224. We also got the flyover there at US 40. We got some Olympic graphics and in one of the tunnels there. When you talk about infrastructure, what I had heard early on is that there is no money for infrastructure here in Park City. Have you heard differently?
So the narrative is that they're not going to be doing capital improvements specifically in relation to the Olympics. Part of the appeal, my understanding, for the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, was that we don't need to create venues, we don't need to create anything, which adds to the sustainability component that they're trying to imbue within the Olympic Games. However, there is this opportunity. If we need infrastructure improvements, we've already, Summit County is very deep in the process on Kimball Junction. It gives us a deadline. We also have been working with our lobbyists and partners within the legislature to emphasize the need to be able to have these improvements done by that point. And so this can be an accelerator that would have some money that may not specifically be dedicated towards the Olympics. But there are monies that are available to enhance infrastructure during this time.
Yeah. Is that part of the discussion going on with Dakota Pacific in terms of they want their project built before 2034?
My understanding is that that's not currently part of the conversation, just similar to what we discussed at our last meeting. We gave an update as far as where their process is. Phasing what that looks like is to be determined as we re-engage with the public process after deciding the viability of the public-private partnership.
All right. And then, Nan, for you, I'm guessing in 10 years you won't be our mayor. Who knows? I don't know if you have any even interest in that. But again, why do you think it's important that you're there?
I think that there's a lot of planning that's going to have to happen over the next 10 years. And Jennifer and the chamber are partnering with the county and the city, and we'll be announcing the release of an RFP to bring someone in to give us a 10-year action plan of what do we need to do in year two, what do we need to do in year three, so that we have that going forward and the community knows what to expect and what the next steps are. We've had so many people reach out to us wanting to be a part of the process as we move forward. Because I've never experienced an Olympics, I think it's important that I go and experience the flow of it. How is it structured? How do people move around? How do people interact? You know, how do they feed that many people that are going to be in town? What does security look like? So I have a list of questions that I want to see.
Yeah, and you think that you can get that going to a summer games versus a winter games? I mean, none of the sports are the same. The weather's certainly a lot different. Access is different given that, you know, you've got nice roads or you've got snowy roads.
Right. You know, I think that there will be similarities, and I may be naive in that, but I think that how people move around and how do they move the athletes around and, you know, how do they... how do you get to different venues? How does that feel as a spectator moving around? So that's what I want to experience.
Yeah, and then talking a little bit more about this planned RFP then for a 10-year action plan, are there businesses out there, companies out there that actually do that Olympic planning?
I'm going to defer to Jennifer on this because she's taking the lead.
And we hope so. It may be a business. It may be an individual person. It may be people who have experience with past games, winter or summer. So we'll be spreading a wide net to collect information about the bid and about the opportunity to move that forward. I think to Nan's point, what I'm really interested in and knowing that we only have five more of these games before it comes to Park City and Salt Lake in 2034, the opportunity to learn how these communities are activating, how are they leveraging their businesses, how are their businesses engaging in the process, how are they marketing themselves, what are they doing for volunteers? One of the things, we have the opportunity to participate in several host tours while we're there. A few that I'm signed up for include volunteering in Paris and how to engage locals and businesses in volunteering. I'm really excited to see that. We'll be seeing and touring the media center. From my understanding, in 2002, the Chamber of Commerce was responsible for implementing and executing a undesignated media center here in Park City, where it was uncredentialed, actually. So any of the media who were uncredentialed had the opportunity to come to Park City and have a media center just for them. I'm really excited to potentially do that again in 2034 and have Park City be the host for that. So there's just so much to learn about what legacy can we create out of these games and what do we need to do today to be able to plan for that. 10 years is going to go by really, really quickly. And one of the things that I love so much about this community is how we are so humble to go and learn from other places who deal with the same issues and challenges that we do. It's one of the reasons why I think Park City is so successful, especially through that leadership tour that we've been doing for 30 years. To have the opportunity to learn from other communities who are doing this will only help us learn from their mistakes and really celebrate what they did well and do that even better here in Park City in Utah.
Yeah, the media center actually was a great success. The chamber did a wonderful job. It was located in the basement of the Main Street Mall. So where, since that's now private, where would something like that even be held here?
Still to be determined.
Okay. And then in terms of some of the other tours you might be taking, Melina, what have you already signed up for these?
Yes, we've signed up for some. I'm also attending with volunteering. I'm going to an ecotourism presentation and tour as well. Also be, you know, walking around, going during some of the events. We're actually, Jennifer and I are attending the basketball event outside of Paris. So we will be taking a train outside of Paris to be able to attend that venue. And one of the things that I intend to do during that event is to experience what that is like, what that means to have events that are outside of main Paris. Just looking at with Park City, it's a little different. We have many events that are up here within Park City and Summit County versus just one. However, want to see how they're interfacing with transportation, transit. How is security different? Is it similar? How are they engaging and activating with events that are not taking place within the main hub?
Yeah. And Nan, what tours are you going to head to?
I'm really excited. I'm going to be attending a lecture at their city hall, because apparently the plaza in front of the city hall is where a lot of the activation is for the people to come in and that. And so I want to learn what were they thinking about as they planned all of that? What kind of things did they take into consideration? What I'm impressed with so far of the games, and I haven't even gone yet, is they seem to be using really creative venues or ways to activate spaces. For example, they don't have a stadium big enough for everyone to be in for the parade of athletes. And so they're bringing all the athletes, each country has its own boat, and they're bringing them up the Seine on their individual boat. The athletes will get out, it's my understanding, and walk around the stadium, get back on their boat, and continue up the river. So, I mean, creativity like that. They're going to have beach volleyball under the Eiffel Tower, because they don't have a beach with a lot of sand. So, you know, I'm really excited to see what creative things can we do here, a little bit out of the box.
All right. Well, Park City kind of had its own Olympics, right? Because we closed Main Street. We had some big video screens put up. We had lots of pin trading going on. I mean, it was really quite festive. And then what we don't have that Paris has is Metro. But we did have parking lots, one being the Dakota Pacific area there, right, where it was kind of blocked off. We also used a parking lot, which is kind of the UDOT. Well, we've got a water treat, or, you know, Mountain Regional Water out there along with the transit facility. So we've kind of lost that parking area. So what are we thinking in terms of what we'll have in 10 years and where we put the cars?
So Summit County Park City right now has engaged in a parking study to really anticipate both the needs for this as well as just generally with our tourism. How can we capture people before they get into town, as we're seeing we have many choke points both within Park City and Summit County and Kimball Junction area right now just during our tourism. I think also one of the things we're looking at is the bus rapid transit through High Valley Transit. That would be something that would be activated and really critical to the success of the games, and again, would be an infrastructure improvement that would benefit the community moving forward with all of our tourism. Also, we, even to your point, with the Dakota Pacific project, are looking at structured parking, what that might look like. As a county, we're looking at other different areas, both in conjunction with the study and just looking at opportunities that may be available through other projects or land that we own that would be appropriate to activate in that sort of way. Again, not just for the Olympics. I think our opinion is we don't want to build infrastructure specifically for the Olympics, and also that the Utah Olympic Committee is not looking for that. We want to find how can we use this again to create or enhance infrastructure that we already need for this community, and use the Olympics as a catalyst and also a deadline for getting that done. Very few times in government do we have a hard deadline like this where we need to get something done by a specific date, and I think that's a wonderful opportunity for us to take advantage of.
All right. Melina mentioned that she gets to go to a basketball game. Nan, do you get to attend any events? Again, opening ceremony is the Friday the 26th.
Yes, I'm gonna go to beach volleyball under the Eiffel Tower.
Okay, and what about you, Jennifer?
I'm really excited to see opening ceremonies. We also have basketball and men's gymnastics. So we'll have the opportunity to see a few different venues. From my understanding, Paris is looking to eliminate the use of single-use plastics in all of their venues. There's a couple of tours related to the sustainability aspect of the games. As you may know, and as your listeners may know, we are aiming at being the first net positive carbon event in 2034. So how can we learn from what they're doing today and improve upon that so that it's not just our venues that are eliminating single-use plastics, but the entire community during that time?
Well, explain that net positive emissions. I mean, you've got thousands of people flying here. There's like no way you could offset all of that, could you?
I'm really looking forward to exploring how to do that.
Okay, so after you return, then what? Well, you compile some sort of community presentation to talk about what y'all learned?
We'll definitely be doing a presentation to our board of directors on what we learned, and then incorporating that into the evaluation of the action plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I think that's to be determined if we collectively are going to do that before each of our councils or boards, or if we will individually do that and have presentations. But absolutely, we'll be bringing that information back with our takeaways, and also really appreciate the park record and sending a photographer that is going to be able to capture those moments also. I think that that's pretty important and critical for us to have that photographic documentation, to Jennifer's point, to be able to look back, what are the things that worked really well. I think that there's some really great opportunities there.
Anything you wanted to add?
No, they both hit it. I think that certainly I'll be presenting to our council the things that I learned. We're all Rotarians, so I would imagine that our Rotary Club is going to get a little debrief as well.
Okay, and then the RFP that you talked about earlier, is there a timeline for when that might get put out?
Right now, we're looking at releasing that RFP on July 29th. So, of course, waiting for after the announcement. Our goal is to actually have the work done prior to the 2025 legislative session. In case there are items in that action plan that we feel like we need to begin advocating for right now related to the legislative session in January. So it will be a fairly quick process, but we are including active public engagement and stakeholder engagement in that RFP, and we'll expect that consultant to do that and do a very good job of that for us.
Okay, anything else anyone wanted to say?
I just really want to stress that how important it is that the county and the chamber and the city are all together. We're all in this working together. Both resorts are interested in working with us as well. So we're going to have a true community-wide effort here.
All right. Bon voyage.
Thank you.
Have a great time.
Merci.
Well, a Highland Estates couple may be facing bankruptcy after being fined for storing landscaping equipment on their property. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports on the $164,000 penalty.
Umberto Fragapane and Melissa De La Rocca have been running their landscaping business from the home they bought in Highland Estates in 2020. The couple had been in business since at least 2015, but ran afoul of Summit County's rules and some neighbors when they moved vehicles and equipment onto their 1.69-acre property on Highland Drive. Neighbors called in complaints, and the controversy has culminated in a citation and a $164,000 fine. Residents who spoke with KPCW acknowledge the penalty is steep, but not everyone thinks it's fair.
I think that's rather excessive, but again, I have nothing to do with the county and their codes and things like that. And again, we have multiple small businesses in the Highland Estates, but they're not obtrusive and things like that. They meet the code requirements.
That's Resident and Homeowners Association board member Kathy Silver. She doesn't know who alerted Summit County code enforcement officers to Fragapane and De La Rocca's property. Court records only say that, quote, adjacent neighbors complained. Silver and fellow HOA board member Don Pencil told KPCW the HOA has not talked to the couple or the county about the issue. County code enforcers first cited Fragapane and De La Rocca on June 28th of last year for storing equipment on their property that's not allowed under the residential neighborhood zoning. The couple had until July 28th of 2023 to remove their work vehicles, but instead applied for a permit July 18th. They began work with the Summit County Planning Department on permitting and were set to appear before the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission on March 12th of this year. Then county planning staff pushed the hearing to March 26th, citing scheduling conflicts. Fragapane and De La Rocca asked for another date because they'd been traveling and were switching legal counsel, but the Planning Commission's agenda didn't change. That was until the agenda got passed around the Highland Estates social media pages. Dozens of residents wrote to the county expressing everything from support for the couple's business to disgust. A few called the property a, quote, eyesore. Thanes Canyon resident Fred Fox was one of the landscaper's clients who asked the county to give the business time to comply with code.
He's just been here that long, and he's expanded his business from what originally started. Probably just mowing lawns by himself, but now it's a very substantial business doing rock work and landscaping, et cetera.
Fragapane and De La Rocca's appointment with the Planning Commission was pushed until April, then again until May, but it never popped up on a commission agenda again. On June 20th, a Summit County Administrative Law judge imposed a fine of $500 for every day the couple had failed to remove their equipment. De La Rocca declined to comment for the story, but in a recording obtained by KPCW through a public records request, Fragapane told the judge the fine may bankrupt them. Summit County did not respond to a request for comment Tuesday. Per the judge's order, the couple removed the landscaping equipment by July 1st. Court records do not show they have filed for bankruptcy yet. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
While the Utah Department of Transportation works to chart a route for the Heber Valley's planned bypass road, Wasatch County leaders want to provide input. KPCW's Grace Dorfler reports local governments are talking bypass goals this week.
An interlocal group of elected officials from Heber, Midway, Wasatch County, and the school district met last week to discuss shared goals for the bypass. Wasatch County Manager Justin Graybaugh says leaders are trying to compress their discussions into a letter to UDOT.
It basically outlines some priorities that those representatives feel are kind of universal across all of these entities about making sure that the bypass preserves our rural character and minimizes its impacts while optimizing kind of the benefit to the Heber City area.
Heber City Council Member Yvonne Barney presented a draft letter at the interlocal meeting, but now it's back with each individual agency for proposed edits. The UDOT bypass letter is a topic on both the Heber and Midway City Council's agendas Tuesday, as well as the Wasatch County Council's meeting agenda for Wednesday. Council members in each body will discuss whether they want to recommend any changes before signing the letter. Graybaugh noted the County Council passed a resolution several weeks ago stating support for UDOT's bypass process.
This is in the same vein of expressing support and wanting to move forward, but doing it in a way that minimizes its impact.
In particular, numerous county leaders have worried aloud about possible impacts on the valley's open space. UDOT is still in the process of identifying the best place for the road. Its decision relies on the results of a traffic study predicting congestion in the Heber Valley years into the future. But its work has been complicated by a recent conservation easement approved for a large swath of the North Fields. The easement includes federal funding, and now UDOT must work with the Natural Resources Conservation Service to determine how its proposed routes are affected.
We've been hoping to hear an update for the last several weeks. We have not heard anything for the last couple months, but I know that they are working with the NRCS and other entities to identify a path forward.
UDOT has said a route decision won't be made until at least the end of this year. Grace Dorf there, KPCW News.
Well, as KPCW is reporting, Summit County's fire danger has increased to extreme. In the studio to tell us what that means, I have Park City Fire Service District Fire Marshal Mike Owens, along with Park City Municipal Fire Marshal Sherry Wollman. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Maybe first explain why we need two fire marshals.
That is an excellent question. So we divide our responsibilities within the county. I'm the person that you want to come talk to within the city. I deal mostly with construction of new buildings, life safety systems such as fire sprinkler systems, fire alarm systems, and that sort of thing, and general code compliance. And then Sherry is responsible for doing the permitting and taking care of Main Street and that sort of thing. So if you're doing something special like a large event, you'd end up talking to Sherry. If you're trying to build a building, you talk to me.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Easy.
Yeah. And so if there was a fire and somebody was going to go out and investigate that, would that be you, Mike?
It's both of us. The fire district is responsible for the investigation and for the determination of the cause and origin of the fire. But we have a great partnership with the building department. And that it's actually very important that both of us are out there. Sherry has a lot more of experience than I do when it comes to actual building construction. And I have a little bit more experience when it comes to fire.
Okay. And how are things changing in terms of what fire suppression in new building?
As changing as far as regulation and codes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's really more Mike's expertise as far as that's what he oversees. I'm really more with the operational fire permits and the wildland urban interface.
Okay. So, Mike, what does an extreme fire danger mean for residents as we approach the July 4th holiday, a holiday that traditionally allows fireworks 3 days before and 3 days after?
The biggest thing that it means is it's just a warning to say, hey, you know, the conditions are such that the fuel, when I say fuel, I mean the grass on the ground, the trees, anything that grows, the fuels are getting drier. We say that the temperatures are getting warmer and that the humidity is down. So it's just kind of a little alarm bell that lets people know that they want to be a little bit more careful than they would otherwise be.
Yeah, so is there anything beyond extreme? This is it.
This is as bad as it gets? This is as bad as it gets. And to be fair, we should take that with a little bit of a grain of salt, because we can have very localized conditions. In some places, we will have very, very dry fuels, and in other places where it's a little bit shadier, the fuels are a little less dry. But that extreme is general for the whole area.
All right. So for the county, Mike, then, do you have to have that extreme fire danger in effect in order to put in firework open fire bans?
We don't. They usually happen together, though. So if there's not an extreme, if the conditions aren't extreme, there's not a whole lot of reason to put those restrictions into place. So you can kind of think of them as two separate things. The restrictions are there because the conditions are getting bad, and then the conditions are extreme because they've gotten bad.
All right, which just automatically means that there are no fireworks?
No, it's actually quite a long process. Mm-hmm. Within the county, outside of Park City Municipal or any municipality, first of all, the county council has to decide that they want the restrictions, and then it goes to the state forester. It's the state forester who actually issues those restrictions.
Okay. And he has done that?
They're in the process. So Summit County Council has talked about doing it. They voted on doing it. And they've sent the paperwork to the state fire marshal's to the state forester's office. I looked on their list today, and as of this very moment, there are no fire restrictions in Summit County, but we'll see them any day.
Okay. And then, Sherry, as a municipality, Park City does have the authority to decide when fireworks and open fires are allowed or not?
Yes, that is correct. We do not need to go through the state forester in order to have a fire prohibition enacted. We put together a staff report and present to City Council. And so there's about a 3-week preparation time where we put in the staff report. It goes through the review process, and then we present to City Council. And then they make the decision based on the information that we provide about whether or not we're going to actually enact a fire prohibition.
Which has been done?
That was done, yes.
Okay.
On the 11th of July.
All right. So what is allowed in terms of any kind of open fire in your backyard?
Right, right. So any previously permitted fire pit, so that could have gone through a building department a building permit where it's like a hard-piped gas fireplace that requires a mechanical permit, that's where we would review the manufacturer's distances to combustibles to ensure safe operation through our inspection process. And then if you had like a what I would call a plug and play like gas fireplace that you buy at Home Depot and hook up to a regular propane tank, that would be something that, under this prohibition, that would require an operational fire permit. And that's something that would actually run through our building department. You can go online to www.parkcity.org to the building department and operational fire permits. We've got a page that will walk you through the process. And then that's where we'll determine what those safe operation distances are and actually perform an inspection so that we can go over that safe operation with the owner.
So what would that cost a property owner?
I believe that costs $55. So it's not terribly expensive. And those are good for 180 days or 6 months.
Okay. And why is that a danger in one of those kind of backyard plug and play, as you put it?
Understood. There's a couple of factors. Largely, it's that you pull it out of the box and you start operating it, but you don't read to see how far you need to be keeping these different devices away from combustibles. You could have overhanging trees. You could have cushions on your patio chairs. A large number of them do not allow them to be operated on combustible surfaces. So that would be like your wooden deck. So that's something to think about. And then the other thing is with nightly rentals, do you know that device is staying where it was originally placed? So by being able to make contact with people and go over these safety regulations, I think it helps people understand, what those safety parameters really are.
All right. What about your barbecue that's on a wood deck?
So those are not regulated under the fire ban. Anything charcoal, anything gas barbecue operated, we would just recommend that you do follow those manufacturer instructions.
All right. And then in terms of kind of the camping areas in Summit County, at this point, there is no ban.
Correct. As of right now, there is no ban. However, when the restrictions do go into place, the only place you will be able to have campfires in established campgrounds is in the established fire pits. And the same thing will go for private residents as well. If you have a permanent fire pit, that could be something that you've dug into the ground and have rocks around, or it could be a pile of rocks that you've put permanently in place. You can have fire pits or you can have fires in those as well. But it does have to be in a permanent fire pit, and if for private property, you have to have running water nearby. So a hose would take care of that.
Yeah, and then in the event that these bans do go into effect for the rest of the county, that would be something similar, those open fire pits, the plug-and-play fire pits. Those would also require an inspection by Park City Fire Service District?
So it's a little bit different in the county. When those restrictions do go into effect, there is no requirement for an inspection. People are left to do what they're supposed to do on their own. The only warning that we tell people is that the state is very aggressive about recovering costs of wildfires that are caused, especially when you've caused a wildfire during a burn restriction.
So they are going after people, huh?
Oh, absolutely. And they are adamant in what they do there.
All right. So in terms of setting off fireworks, what is somebody facing if you, Park City Police, find somebody doing that?
Understood. That is a Class B misdemeanor, much like a DUI. It can levy a fine of up to $1,000 and possibly 6 months in jail.
Okay, serious.
Yes, it's not a joke.
Yeah. And we've reported several red flag warning days recently. What does that mean?
That means that the conditions are prime for a fire to spread quickly. So again, we have the high winds, low humidity, and warm temperatures. Those are the three bad things that'll trigger that red flag warning. And just like the extreme fire danger sign, it's more of a warning to say whatever you're doing, to put a lot of consideration into it. It's not a great time to start a campfire.
Okay. And what about this kind of drift smoke we're seeing? Where's that coming from?
Boy, is that the worst thing or what? It's just killing
me. Oh, nothing
like
2020, though.
Oh, that's absolutely, yeah. So there are several fires around the state. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing up here is not coming from inside the state of Utah. It's coming from outside. Most of the larger fires in the state of Utah are coming from, down in the south. So we won't get the effect of that smoke unless we have southern winds coming up. Most of it's just coming from the west.
Mm-hmm. Is it dangerous?
It's irritating. There's studies going on right now to determine what the actual long-term effects of this type of smoke is. The downside is there's not a lot you can do about it. You know, I have an air filter and air purifier in my office that I'm able to close the door and turn my air purifier on, but as soon as I step outside of my office, then that goes away. And when you open the door, the effects of that purifier get canceled pretty quick. So it's not a lot of effective things you can do.
Hmm. All right. Anything else, Christine, that you want city residents to know?
No, if you have any questions about our fire prohibition, you know, feel free to call the building department, and happy to explain anything and answer any questions.
Okay, and Mike, any?
You know, I just really appreciate the work that the people are doing out there. We didn't talk about our chipping program, but it's going in full swing. There's a lot of people removing a lot of wood. I understand that not being able to set off fireworks for the 24th is going to be a pain in the neck, and I just appreciate people's understanding and the diligence that we have in our community. It's really because of that that we're able to look up on the hills and see the green trees that we like to see.
Yeah, I don't think we've had any. I mean, we've seen some small fires in Heber. What about Summit County?
So we have had a couple of small, I can speak to the Park City Fire District. Mm-hmm. We've had one small wildland fire, and it was really just along the highway. It ended up burning about 20 by 20 feet. So not really anything to speak of. We've been pretty lucky. And like I said, really the credit to that goes to the citizens of our community.
That was a hot car? What was that? What caused that?
You know, we didn't do an inspection or an investigation on that one. It just wasn't, for a 20-foot by 20-foot fire, there was nothing to discover there.
Okay. All right. Mike, Sherry, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In September, Park City will once again be hosting the annual point-to-point mountain bike endurance race, but with a new director. In the studio, I have the founding race director of Park City Point-to-Point, Jay Burke, and on the phone, we're kind of going in and out. We have the new director, Steve Adderholt. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Steve, can you hear us okay?
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So, yes. Jay, maybe you start and just explain what point-to-point is for those who may not have heard about it.
Yeah, well, we've been, this will be year 16, and you know, this has been an annual fall event for a long time. We saw an opening to host a big mountain bike on the trails, and this, you know, being 15 years ago, it was a time when it was like, hey, this would be great. Let's get a lot of people to Park City and ride bikes, and you know, it's grown from there, and here we are 15, 16 years later, and, you know, we've got a robust trail system, and, you know, we're still putting the event on, and people are clamoring to get here to do the event. It's a wonderful day.
Yeah. Give us kind of the specifics of it, though.
Well, 75 miles We start in Round Valley, finishes out near Kimball Junction. We now finish down at the bottom of the ULP at the Skull Candy Building. We're pretty much 90% single track, never on the same trail twice. And it's quite a day. The fastest are, you know, Keegan Swenson, I think, has got the kind of the record around 6 hours, and you know, the slowest are 13 hours. So there's such a wide variety of finishers and participants. It's, again, it's just a wonderful day out on the trails.
What's the, in terms of how many?
No, the vertical fluctuates. I mean, we're always, you know, 11,000 to 13,000 feet in that zone. You know, back in the old days, it was as much as 15,000. So,
yikes. So why are you stepping back?
Well, it's time, you know. I've really, it's just been a passion, and so enjoyable to do, but it's just as I get older, I there's certainly other things I want to do, and it takes a lot of energy and effort to keep it moving. So you know, hence Steve jumped in the picture.
Okay, and Steve's been kind of working side by side for a few years.
Yes, yeah, he has. He's been a part of the event for the last 3 years, and really has an understanding of what makes it kind of tick and move, and all the ins and outs, because as you can imagine, we work with a lot of entities here in Park City to get it done, with 75 miles of trail being covered.
All right, Steve, well, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wanted the job.
Well, I rode the Park City point-to-point a few years ago and loved the race, you know, when I rode it, and have a few connections in the community through the mountain bike community that have known Jay and have known the point-to-point for a long time. So I've looked up to and respected what Jay built for a long time. And I'm, by profession, in the event industry. I put on mainly running events and have for about 16 years, which is coincidentally how old the point-to-point is. But I've been organizing mainly running events for you know, that long. And so putting on events is not new to me. The mountain bike space is newer, but yeah. So when I a mutual friend, I think, connected Jay and I, and I said I'd love to help out with the point to point, and then it kind of grew from there.
Okay, so a requirement of any new director had to be that he or she could ride it?
Yeah, for sure. It was one of the first things I think I asked Steve. Well, you've done this, correct?
Yeah. and Steve, are you based here in Park City?
No, I lived in Salt Lake for 15 years. I now live in Boulder.
All right. So come September then, I mean, is it's Steve's baby?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. We've been working together, like I said, for a few years. And so Steve's really taken the reins this year and has worked through all the permitting and a lot of what I like to call kind of the minutiae, you know, the small stuff. And I'll still be helping with a few things for the next year or two, but again, stepping back and you know, letting Steve take the rein.
Yeah. So what kind of permitting is needed? I can understand for kind of your finish area, for the starting area as well, Steve?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'd be surprised. There are quite a few permits. We go through private property. We go through, you know, two different ski resort, three different ski resort areas, two different ownerships, the UOP, as you said, the county, the start finish area. So there's a number of permits that go into an event like this. I mean, it's 75 miles, you know, all the way around Park City. So there's numerous different land agencies and owners that need to check the boxes with.
Okay. And I think signups have traditionally been held like in February.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
Yep. They sell out like in minutes still?
Yeah, well, you know, Steve moved the registration platform this year, and it seems to be a lot faster than what we used. And gosh, I think this year it was 2-3 minutes they were all gone, and
six minutes.
It's crazy. And then we have you know, the waiting list this year. What's left on there, Steve? A couple hundred people in the waiting room to get an entry.
Yeah, and I mean that speaks to what Jay has built. You know, a very good event, but also just amazing. And Park City has such amazing trails. You know, this event is, as Jay mentioned, you know, over 90% single track. It's just such a great and grueling course. And I think people that are local, well, I know people that are local know that this is such a great event, but I don't know that locals have the eye that people from out of the state have, that this is, it really is a pinnacle mountain bike event. So hats off to Jay for what he's built, and really happy to feel lucky to be able to take it over for Jay.
Right. And how many do you allow to race?
You want to take that, Steve?
yeah, right around 400. It fluctuates, you know, the there's always no shows on racing, but right around 400 is how many race.
Yeah, so I mean, other than I guess just bragging rights, are there prizes involved?
Oh yeah. That's one of the things I believe that the Point to Point has been known for through the years. You know, we have great partnerships with local brands. We try to focus on Utah brands. So of course, you know, Skull Candy and brands like that that have been around a while. Scott has been our title partner for many years now. I'm think going on 8 or 9. And they're right down the street in Salt Lake at the mouth of the canyon. So yes, we have, you know, we go 5 deep in the prizing, and that typically is all, you know, product. So, and then we have a ton of fun, awards within the event itself, one being the I'm Somebody Award, which we give away a bike every year from Scott. So, and that's just a random number draw, and the person who crosses the finish line at that number, you know, we hand over a bike to them. Last year it was a lot of fun. It was a gravel bike, so a lot of fun to be had at the Point to Point.
Sure. So as you get older, and considering, you know, what this race ever have an e-bike component to it?
Boy, I, you know, we get asked that a lot. I guess that, you know, I'll defer that to the bigger entities of Park City, you know, once they open that window. But perhaps, yeah, you know, I think with it being as long and grueling as it is, it drops off pretty quick. I mean, our 50 plus category is large, and then we get to that 60 plus and it really tapers off. I don't know if that's age and wisdom, and with it, it's like, why in the world would I do that? But yeah, there's a possibility, you know, you never know.
Yeah.
Don't shut the door on that.
So 400 entrants, I mean, how many actually finish?
Well, the attrition rate, you know, we usually lose about 25%, but that, it really, it fluctuates with the weather and the conditions. You know, I mean, you pump up the heat to 90, and having it be really dry, that, you know, just chisels out a bunch of people immediately that aren't fueling and drinking enough. So I'd say about 25% typically.
Okay, well, good job. Jay, anything else you want to add?
No, I'm excited and hope everyone can welcome Steve with open arms, and we get another 15 years out of this. It's such a fun community event.
Okay, and Steve, we'll bring you back closer to the race. You can kind of give the heads up to the community in terms of where they're going to want to ride on that Saturday morning.
That sounds great. Thank you.
All right, congratulations on the new gig. Thank you.
Thanks.
Well, once again, Summit County has increased its fire danger to extreme as wildfire risk increases across the state. Summit County also plans to authorize a fireworks ban for all unincorporated parts of Summit County. However, that has not been approved yet by the state fire forester. There are no active fires or red flag warnings currently in the county. However, a health advisory is in place for drift smoke from fires in the northwestern states. If you'd like to sign up for Summit County Fire updates, you can go online to this story at kpcw.org.